Any of you interested in joining our little organization and getting a newsletter, please see Tim Heaton afterwards, since he's the president. That's why he's on the panel, right, Tim?
Yeah.
We have two presentations today in this session. The first will be given by Tim Heaton, who is a professor of sociology at BYU, and he is with the Center for Studies of the Family there. He will be looking at the demographics of the contemporary Mormon family. When he's finished, we'll have Stephen Barr present. He is also a professor of sociology at BYU. He presents a paper, Religion and Adolescent Drug Use, a Comparison of Mormons and Other Religions. I just want to give you a little bit more background about these papers and our two presenters. Sociologists like to study institutions, and of course religion is one of the still dominant institutions in society. And the primary question we always like to ask is, what influence does religion seem to have on people's behavior? And I think what you'll see with these two papers is that religion certainly does have an impact, but some will be surprised at how little impact, and others will think it's too much. So, but the question that we're simply asking here is, do you see any difference, depending upon whether a person is religious or not religious, and then do you see any difference by religious preference? The other thing I want to say about these papers is that the sociology of Mormonism is, I believe, taking on a new dimension these days, primarily because there are so many Mormons in the land that they show up in national surveys. That is, there is enough Mormons that end up in a national random sample of studies that we can begin to take those Mormons and compare them with other groups. And prior to this, prior to within, the last 5 years, that just was not possible because there were so few Mormons. The thing that's interesting about these papers is that they are based on national data sets in which we're able to simply do the research just because there were so many Mormons that answered the response that we have enough for the category Mormon. So I think that as we have more and more studies like that, like this, and more surveys being done, we'll be able to know more about Mormons and how they compare with other people. So with that, I'm going to turn the time over to Tim Heaton first.
Marie talked about differences. If we would find a difference in Mormon behavior related to theology, we would certainly expect to find it in family behavior, because that's one area where our theology is quite distinctive. For example, we just had a session on polygamy in this room before this session. We also have beliefs about eternal marriage and the importance of marriage in heaven. Previous studies of Mormons have then focused on family behavior and found some differences. In one attempt to summarize many of the differences, I came up with the four C's of the Mormon family. In case you haven't heard these, I'll repeat them. First C is chastity, meaning less extramarital and premarital sex. The second C is children, that is above average family size. The third C is conjugality, that is a preference for marriage. And the fourth C is chauvinism. That is a belief in male authority in the family. Yet other analyses we've done of national data show that in many other ways Mormon families aren't that different in terms of family violence, time they spend with children, how well they get along with their relatives, family stress, how well they evaluate their performance as a parent and a homemaker. In their marital satisfaction, in many ways, Mormons don't seem to be much different. So, given all that research, why do we need to talk more about it today? Well, there are two reasons, two things I want to emphasize today. First is a lot of the things we know about Mormons are based on studies sponsored by the church or done within a church context. I'm becoming more convinced that that may bias the results. The church has more difficulty, for example, locating singles. So they may underestimate the number of single people in the church or divorced people. Plus, you may respond differently to a survey with a cover letter from elder, president, whoever, a general authority, than to a survey from the National Bureau of the Census or some other national organization. So today we want to present evidence that's all from national sources, no church sponsorship. Second, family behavior has been changing dramatically in the last several years, and we need to keep monitoring change. So all of the evidence I will present today is based on surveys done in the 1980s, so it may be some of the most recent evidence we have on Mormon families. In fact, I took three surveys, one done in 1982, one in 1987, and one in 1988, tried to match those three surveys in terms of the kinds of questions that were asked. Now, wording is a little different, so it's a problem comparing the three surveys, but what I will argue today is that any differences across surveys will be evident for Mormons, but also for other groups that we're comparing Mormons to, so the comparison is still valid. Another thing I should mention about these surveys, two of the national surveys were only done on women, and so I will restrict my analysis to women. Okay, three general areas of family behavior will be discussed. Sexual behavior, as I noted, chastity is one of the four C's of the Mormon family. We'll talk some about children and some about marriage. These national demographic surveys didn't have any chauvinism questions, at least all three of them didn't, so we can't assess the chauvinism here. Enough talk, let's start looking at some of the information we have here. First characteristic we want to consider, age at first sexual intercourse. Now what I've done for a comparison is take the Mormons in this national survey, compare them with 16 other religious ethnic groups. We've separated out blacks and Hispanics because even though they may share religious preference, ethnicity also is an important influence on family behavior. Okay, so looking at this chart, we can see that Mormons are similar to several groups. White Lutherans, Methodists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians. They're similar to white denominations in terms of age at first intercourse. These are only women, that's right. They're women only. Oh. Thank you, Marie. just a bunch of women.
Without respect, whether they're married.
That's right. Now, another thing I've done is try and correlate the characteristics I'll show you with a few other characteristics of the people, in particular the year they were born, how often they go to church, whether they work or not, whether they grew up with both parents.
How long did the survey was
When I combine them all together, I have over 20,000 people. So it will vary some from case to case, but for example, the Mormon women here, it's about 450 women. So it's a large enough sample to give fairly reliable, statistically reliable estimates. Now maybe they lied, I don't know. looking at these correlates shows that the LDS age has been declining at a faster pace than in most other groups. That frequent church attenders delay sexual activity more within Mormonism than is true for most other religious groups, and that employment is associated with later age at initiating sexual intercourse among Mormons than is the case for other groups. Now, it's helpful to consider age at first intercourse. Somebody mentioned without respect to marriage, so maybe you might be more interested in premarital sex. So let's look at the second chart. Here we estimate the percent that will ever have had premarital sex. And you can look at this number in two different ways. You can see that the Mormons, the only other group as low as the Mormons in premarital sex, are white fundamentalists. Now you might say I've cheated here on the chart, because the other side of the coin, the rate for white fundamentalists and Mormons is 60%. Much higher than you might expect given the church's ideal that sex outside of marriage is a very serious sin, maybe next to murder. Now, does the church really think these 60% of, most of them would be teenagers, are sinners, almost as bad as murderers? I don't think so. My sense is the church's position has moderated a lot, and the leaders realize that this is an issue that our teenagers face, and that the behavior is increasing. But everyone I've talked to is surprised at the 60% estimate. It's higher than previous estimates we've seen. Let's see, what were the correlates here? This gap, this trend, I think probably creates a gap between church leaders and teenagers. Most of the leaders in the church grew up in an era when premarital sex was substantially lower, and it has been increasing rapidly. More rapidly for Mormons than for most other groups. In fact, this is one behavior where we appear to be converging with the national average.
Was there any data in terms of marrying earlier or later?
We'll get to that. Okay, earlier. Marry earlier. So this is a little bit surprising because we marry earlier besides. In fact, well, that's part of the reason our premarital sex is lower, probably, is because we marry earlier. Okay, let's look at one other chart here. Better to marry than to burn, right? Didn't Paul say that? Okay. The third behavior I classify in sexual behavior is cohabitation. This cohabitation is increasing rapidly in the nation. In fact, people who reach their 20s in the 1980s, it's estimated that half of them will cohabit before they marry. Now, for you historians, this isn't the same cohabitation that we talked about in the 1850s and 60s. This isn't polygamy. This is living together without being married. Well, to cohabit, you share.
You live together.
That's right. Live in the same household. And here again, consistent with the emphasis on chastity, you can see that Mormons are lower. Another thing that's interesting to me is that the Mormon rate has not been increasing near as much as the national rate. So premarital sex is increasing faster than the national trend. Cohabitation, not as fast. To me, it suggests maybe that cohabitation is a more serious infraction of the church's sexual norm.
And
being very open about it. Maybe that, too, is explained by the younger age of marriage. Okay. Okay. Let's look at the three measures of marriage now. We've already hinted about those. Here we have median age at first marriage. Half of the Mormon women in this sample are married before their 21st birthday. White fundamentalists are a little lower. White Baptists are a little lower. But most other groups are older when they marry. So we could say, yes, indeed, Mormons have a young age at marriage. This emphasis on marriage is also evident in the next chart, if you'd like to put that up. This is the percent currently married. Here, Mormons have the highest percentage. Now, another national survey was done recently. Maybe you saw that in the newspapers written up. And it also showed that among several major religious groups, Mormons had the highest percent married. So the emphasis of the church on marriage seems obvious. But at the same time, you should point out that even though we're the highest, for every two married women in the church, there is one single woman. So even though it's high on marriage, the single status is quite common. Well, the different surveys use different ages. One was 18 and over, the other two were 14 to 45. So the youngest people in here would be 14. And at 45, you have fewer women, but there are some women 60 or 70 years old.
Comparison on the black women there, 30, 40 years ago, well, that certainly wouldn't be true there. I mean, the black family really seems to be disintegrating quickly, or it seems like it's accelerating. Do you have studies 30, 40 years ago that show that they've been more of them married? My impression is that they probably would be.
I'm not really an expert on black history, but certainly in the last 20 years, the percent of blacks who are married has been declining. We could spend a whole session on why that's the case. But yeah, it's pretty obvious here, and then when we get to children, we'll see a difference the other way, that the black family is much more parenthood than it is marriage compared to most of the white religious groups. Okay, let's look at the next chart. I think this may be the one that surprised me the most, because most previous research showed that Mormon marital stability was substantially higher than the national average. These data don't show that. You could say, well, Mormons are about average. Here, after 10 years, we have 70% of Mormon marriages intact. Let's see, how many groups are lower? The white groups. The no religion group is less stable. The non-denominational Protestant group is less stable. Many of the groups have somewhat greater marital stability. Catholics, especially Jews, Lutherans, Methodists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and so on. So, at least during the 80s, appears that marital stability is lower.
Yeah. You said a little bit ago that on a chart like this, your total end might be 400. Do you have a reading on how many Mormons there would be?
That was 400 Mormons.
400 Mormons.
Yeah, now, you have to be married to be at risk of marital dissolution, so we'd have fewer than 400 Mormons here, but I should have looked at the numbers, but maybe 300 Mormons and thousands of people across the survey.
Are the differences statistically significant?
Yeah, now if I started doing paired comparisons between Mormons and one other group, they may not be.
Yeah, so they may be more...
Well, I think so you're wondering why I'm surprised, because they're not very different. Well, partly because in previous studies they were different, lower, now somewhat higher. Well, the years of the divorces could go back in time, because they said, when were you married and when you were divorced, but the surveys were all taken in the 1980s.
Was there a regional bias on the, at least on the Mormon?
Probably more in the West. I didn't look at that closely. Mormons are more likely to live in the West, and divorce rates are higher in the West. So that might be a little part of this. But why are we higher here when other studies showed lower rates? Yeah. The two explanations that have been given for this are, well, Mormons marry too young, and we have high expectations of what marriage should be like. Now, the data I have here don't say anything about expectations, but we do know at what age they got married. And this presented another surprise to me, because for every other group, people who married at an older age had more stable marriages on the average. That was not true for Mormons. Okay? Now, you have a comment. Let me give you Marie's explanation first, okay, since she's sitting up here. The Marie hypothesis is that as Mormons get older and they're not married, they feel some pressure to get married. To be a legitimate Mormon, maybe you need to be married, so maybe you should accept any proposition that comes along. Once we start breaking out this sample by age, we end up with less than 400, in fact, handfuls of Mormons. But there are a few women who married, for this group, at a relatively old age of over 23, and their marriages didn't last very long. And it's that group of women that ruin the common correlation between age at marriage and marital stability. So there is some support here for the notion that it's relatively old Mormon women, old at marriage, who create some of this higher divorce rate. It's consistent with Marie's hypothesis. Okay, comment.
Well, it's just that we also have simple marriage, which is marriage forever. And under that feeling, you might want to get out early. The other churches, since they know they're going to be separated at death, they might want to make it to the end and just let them have the marriage. One must not overlook the theological.
Okay, very good. But if we have eternity, why are we in such a hurry in the first place? Because of the young age of marriage. Yeah, it's an eternity in a hurry, right? Right.
Stick with theology, Paul.
I should note that dissolution rate appears to be going up faster for Mormons than for most other groups. National estimates are now that 2/3 of the people that married in the 80s will get divorced, and based on this, we wouldn't expect the difference to be that great for Mormons. So maybe 60% or to 2/3 of Mormons married in the 80s will eventually end up divorced if this holds.
Is that maybe a convergence with national rates of Mormons becoming more like?
Yeah, it appears to be more like national rates. Now, this in some ways doesn't seem compatible with our emphasis on marriage. And it appears to me that the church has a dilemma now. What do you do when divorce rates are high and you want to encourage marriage? Do you discourage divorce or help people through the transition? Now, here's a question for the theologians, for example. Right now, when people want to remarry in the temple, there's a strong gender bias. It makes it easier for men to remarry in the temple than for women to remarry in the temple. Given numbers like the high dissolution rate, yet the high emphasis on marriage, it seems that we might want to reconsider that policy, a policy that was established for very different reasons and under very different marriage norms than appear to characterize the church today. Okay, let's talk about children for a while. Here again, as you saw, we marry young. We also begin childbearing at a relatively young age. So half of Mormon women have a child shortly after their 22nd birthday. The black groups, regardless of religion, tend to begin childbearing earlier. White fundamentalists and white Baptists aren't that different from Mormons, but most other major Protestant groups wait substantially longer to begin childbearing. Let's look at the next chart. We'll hurry through these. We're running out of time. Yes, we take the cake on desired family size. Substantially higher than other groups. 40% higher than other major white Protestant groups.
So, definitely two or three children, somebody.
Well, for an individual, it may not seem that difference, but for a population as a whole, it is a substantial difference. If we were to imagine two populations, one growing at a 40% faster rate than the other, those would be very different populations. And this is an average for population. But the average there, 2.8 children, that would seem very low to our pioneer ancestors. Where eight children was more the average. It's even lower than our baby boom parents. At least my baby boom parents. So there's been a substantial decline, yet Mormons maintain their difference.
What is the present size of the Mormon family?
I hate it when people ask what's the size of the Mormon family. Because the people whose families are completed were having their children at a younger age. So that's not really the current Mormon family size, is it? Because they had their children a decade or so ago. The ones who aren't done yet, we don't know, because they may still have children. Okay?
What I'm trying to establish here is this number higher or lower than previous generations?
Oh, definitely lower. No doubt about it. It's declining substantially for Mormons as well as for other groups. Now, the Mormon decline, in this case, the Mormon decline isn't faster than for other groups. But there's clearly been a decline. One last chart. Percent having a premarital birth, and here we noted some difference between black and white families. That really shows up. Blacks are much more likely to have children before marriage than whites. Mormons are fairly similar to other groups in the percent that have a birth before marriage. What is the Mormon value there? About 7%. Other category, which includes other religions, mostly non-Christian religions.
before I present the results, one other thing about the method. In many of the studies that have been done, there haven't been appropriate controls, in my opinion. So if you compare different religions, you have to ask, is it the religious preference or some other comparison? For example, you notice from Tim's data that a high percentage of black people are Baptists. And so if you have one particular group, say Baptists, and they have a different rate, is that due to their religious preference, or is that due to people of a lower education or minority status in that religious group? So it's very important to control for things like education and income, which many studies haven't done, and I have done on some of my comparisons here. Okay, let me begin and show you the first slide. First, I will just have some rough comparisons which show drug use for each of the five drugs by religion. And some of them aren't too surprising. These are the number of high school seniors that have smoked cigarettes during the past month. Roughly for the nation, it's around somewhere between 25% and 30%. It doesn't vary much by the other six religious categories. And Mormons, it's about half what the others are, which is not too surprising given our beliefs. So we have low cigarette use. Okay, next slide, please. Alcohol is similar, except the use of alcohol is much higher. Roughly about two-thirds of high school seniors in the United States have consumed alcohol during the past month. And you can see the rates by religion. Generally, the fundamentalists have somewhat lower rates than the regular Protestants, Catholics, and Jews. Others somewhat lower. And again, LDS are about half of what the others are, so substantially fewer. Still, I guess similar to Tim's data, when you think that there are these LDS people around who are taught not to smoke and drink, and one-third of them say that they had alcohol within the past month. So there's not a small number of LDS youth that are out there drinking alcohol. Maybe you knew that. Yes, that does count beer. Okay. Next we have marijuana. About 20% of the high school seniors in the United States have had marijuana within the past month. This falls somewhat similar to the smoking pattern. And you can see the stepwise progression there. Again, the fundamentalists and others are lower, and the LDS, again, are the lowest at about 13%. Again, I'd say the same question. More than 1 out of 10 of the high school seniors that are LDS have say that they've had marijuana within the past month. Much less than others, but perhaps higher than many of the parents would think. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, this one shows a different pattern. The others showed almost a stepwise progression, with the Mormons noticeably lower than the others. For amphetamines, you notice that the Jews, which were higher than the others, are much lower than anybody else. And the Mormons are a little lower than the others, but really not that much different, especially no difference at all than the other religions or fundamentalists, and not too much lower than the Catholics or Protestants. So in terms of amphetamines, which is lower use than the other drugs, there's not near as much difference between Mormon youth and other religious groups. And finally, we'll turn to cocaine, which is the drug that people are most concerned about. Here you see the stepwise progression again, and you've noticed on a number of those that those with no religion have substantially higher rates. And again, the Mormons are the lowest on this one, but again, those last four particularly, Mormons are pretty similar to Protestants, fundamentalist Protestants, and other religions in the amount of cocaine use. Okay, that gets us just a look at religious preferences. And so you can see how generally a couple of conclusions can be drawn. People who belong to religion tend to have lower use, and what we might call fundamentalist religions, some non-Christian, LDS, and fundamentalist Protestants were consistently lower, especially for cigarettes, alcohol, and marijuana. Yes, they would. That's right. Right. Okay, let's start with the next slide now. Now this one I did what's called a multiple classification analysis. And without getting into statistics, what I did was look at each of the drugs and computed kind of a grand mean for the whole group, and then saw how each group varied from that mean. And I also say in this, we statistically controlled for two variables, the parents' education and the religiosity. And you know, people might not belong to a religion and yet still might, in a personal sense, be very religious. And you all know people who attend church regularly who may not think religion is very important and have much religion in that sense. So we've controlled for these two variables, which changes the results. When we control for the parents' education and the religiosity and then look at religious preference, for smoking, we don't see too much difference. Again, the LDS are much lower and the Catholics are a little higher. What's interesting here is those with no religion, when we control for that, are actually below the mean on cigarette smoking. Okay, next slide, please. This is very similar to the cigarettes. Catholics being somewhat higher, none being lower, and Mormons again being noticeably lower, even when we control for the parents' education and religiosity. Okay, third slide. And this one, similar but more extreme, Mormons again the lowest. It's interesting, again, when we control for education and parents' religiosity, those with no religion are almost as low as the Mormons on marijuana use. Okay, and then as before, the last two slides show more difference. This one is amphetamine use, which we were pretty similar to the others. On amphetamine use, when we control, you see the Jews are much lower. The nuns are somewhat lower, but the Mormons are fractionally above the mean, very similar to the others. So when you control for education, the amount of amphetamine use among high school students who are Mormons is virtually no different than the group, the United States as a whole. And let's turn to cocaine. Cocaine shows the same kind of thing. By religious preference, when you control for education and religiosity, Protestants and nuns are considerably lower, Catholics higher, Mormons very close to the average on cocaine use. Yes? No, it was the parents' education that we controlled for, which is kind of a crude thing for, and the religiosity was an index of the importance of religion in their life, kind of the youth's perception of how important it was. Right. Okay, now let's go to the next set of slides for each drug. On this, I looked at the difference between actives and inactives in each church, and we defined actives, those that attended a religious service at least once a month were considered actives, and the others that were less were inactives. What's interesting here, and we've computed differences for each of these, is between actives and inactives among Mormons is much greater than among the other groups. Actives in attending religious services. So the actives are those that we computed a drug use score and we subtracted that drug use score for those that attended church at least once a month from those that attended less than once a month.
Is it possible that the previous cigarette use might have a different dimension in the inactive one that you're doing? It's a sign of rebellion, but it has an enhanced.
Yes. Yes. Right. That's right. And so that certainly would make a difference. And there's also been a thing that's been called paradoxical drinking, especially for alcohol use, where they say that because there's a strong belief against it, when people become disaffiliated with the church, drinking alcohol and perhaps smoking is almost a sign that you're disaffiliated. And so, and some have said that maybe we have less alcohol use, but among those that do drink, they're more likely to have problem drinkers. And I have some evidence of that among this group in just a minute. So let's turn to the next slide now. Again, this is similar to the other one. Large difference between the inactives and inactives, which support what you just said. And not near as much difference. Again, those on the right end, Catholics, Jews, and others, there is not very much difference between actives and inactives in alcohol consumption.
Does this show that the difference is greater because 1.6 instead of 0.92? With cigarettes, the difference was 0.92. Here's 1.6.
Right.
Does that mean that they're more inactive, more likely to use alcohol than they are to smoke cigarettes?
Yes, this is a larger difference because it's 1.61. That's right. This is a difference between them. Okay, next slide, please. As before, the biggest differences are in the first three drugs. tobacco, alcohol, and marijuana, and this also shows a larger difference between the actives and inactives, and less among the others. Okay, next slide. As before with the amphetamines, we also see, even though our use was similar to the other groups, there still was a large difference between actives and inactives, larger among Mormons and other groups in the use of amphetamines. And then finally, the cocaine. Okay, in the cocaine, you see a little more of an up and down. Catholics have a larger difference between the actives and inactives, and the others somewhat, but the LDS, again, noticeably higher. Yes. In all of these cases, the inactives were higher. And that's been shown, you know, among all religious groups, that those that are active in their religious group tend to use less drugs. Okay, so now let me just draw a few conclusions from this. First of all, overall, these data and others show that those who are affiliated with a religious organization tend to have a lower rates of drug use than those not affiliated. If you look at specific denominations, Mormons and fundamentalist Protestants tended to have lower rates of drug use than adolescents in other religious denominations. However, as you saw, for amphetamines and cocaine, Mormons and fundamentalists had usage rates that were similar to seniors in the other denominations. Yes?
Why is amphetamine not so high on the family? How do they use amphetamine?
How do they use it? Well, they use it just because it's fun, because their friends offer it, because it helps them stay awake, because it gives them a kick, you know.
Used for weight control.
Yes, it is also used for that, too.
Do athletes use it?
Athletes have been somewhat occasionally use it, especially before performances, because it, you know, they think that it may heighten their performance, make them more alert, and perform at a higher level. Perhaps that's the case. Now, you know, these are, of course, all cases where they took the drug without a doctor, you know, saying that they should take it. But they certainly could get it, yes. Some of them get it from their parents' medicine cabinets, and so therefore they may view that differently. And they have not learned ever since they were very small, don't smoke, don't drink. You know, nobody said don't take speed and that kind of thing. So, and certainly we are a very drug-oriented culture. If you even just watch TV, you know, there's dozens of ads about if you have this problem or that problem, there's various drugs that are there that kind of will help you solve that problem. Okay, so for amphetamines and cocaine, we're not much different. Adolescents who attend religious services regularly were less likely to use drugs than those who did not attend church. And probably one of the most interesting thing, the key difference between actives and inactives and drug use is much greater among Mormon adolescents than others. So in that sense, religiosity is a much better predictor of drug use among Mormons than among others. And finally, I had some other slides, and because of, well, I have a couple more minutes, so I guess we could show some of those quickly, those last few. This kind of hits the paradoxical thing. This just looks at people who are inactive. And the question is, you know, do Mormons who are inactive, are they similar to others or different? For cigarettes, it shows here that we're basically the same as other groups as far as cigarette smoking. Those inactive LDS are very similar to people who don't attend church in other denominations. Okay, if you take alcohol, and probably this is the key one where they say the paradoxical drinking thing would suggest that maybe the Mormons should be higher. And we don't have a really refined measure of quantity here, but according to this measure, the inactive overall aren't different than the inactives in other religious groups, so that it does not support the idea that there's paradoxical drinking. George?
What is your measure
of quantity? On this one, we just measured use during the past month and number of days that they used it.
Number of days.
Yes. And so in terms of number, so I don't have right here a measure of, you know, how much they consumed each time, but I did have a measure of the number of days that they took it, which should at least be somewhat indicative of they may drink infrequently a lot, could be an indication of probably drinking, but drinking, you know, every day or many days could also be an indication of that. And so by the days indicator, it doesn't show that the inactives have a drinking problem more than anybody else.
A lot of the inactive are really interesting. They're very large, but isn't it the case that Mormon teens are less likely to be inactive because they have enough inactives that you have confidence in other people?
Yeah, there were enough inactives that we have confidence. Well, I don't have that exact number right in front of me, but yeah. So there doesn't seem to be any evidence for that. Now, in conclusion, just let me say this, of course, is a beginning effort, and there's a lot more that needs to be done in terms of things like measuring quantity and more refined measures of activity and some of those kinds of things. But I think it gives us an initial look, and I guess as far as the surprises or maybe concerns, I'm sure you weren't surprised that those that are active have less drug use, and especially for tobacco, alcohol, and probably marijuana. The fact that there wasn't much difference, especially when you controlled for education, on amphetamines and cocaine certainly may be surprising to some. Do you have a question?
Is there a correlation?
Well, I've seen that debated both ways as far as marriage, where some people say that the religion is a joint activity, you can go together and that helps. I've also seen people argue that those that are heavily involved in the church, that's a way you can escape from your marriage. You're so busy doing your church work, you don't have time to talk to your spouse about interpersonal things, and so therefore that can harm your marriage.
Yeah.
So I guess there's those two ways that possibly could work.
Pardon?
Yeah, is there any studies on that if the marriage?
Well, I guess you'll have to ask him about that one. I don't know any off the top of my head since my presentation was on drug use. Maybe we should end mine right now and let Marie talk, and we can get in a discussion about that one. Thank you.
Let me just briefly comment, and then we'll open it up to discussion. We can talk about this. One of the things I think that we conceive with this data is, in many ways, a very different picture about how much maybe individual Latter-day Saints really fit the norm of expectations in terms of what it's like to grow up Mormon. And, in our visions of Mormonism, I think we see kids growing up and boys particularly going on missions, coming home, getting married, marrying the temple, and happy ever after sort of notion. In actuality, we find that participation in the church and within Mormonism is very much a developmental process, very much a process of people leaving for a while and coming back. In a research we did several years ago, in a study we published in 1988, we estimated that 78% of Latter-day Saints have a period of at least 1 year of not going to church in their lives, and that two-thirds of those eventually return to church activity. And I thought that would be an interesting statistic to play off against some of the things you're seeing here. The nice thing about national data sets is that we have less activity bias. That is, if you're a researcher at BYU and send out a questionnaire, those people are currently not participating in the church may be less likely to send it back. But if it's just a national group where, like the drug use study or the national study of individuals and households, you get people's response and you get the full spectrum of Latter-day Saints, no matter where they are. The other thing I wanted to say, too, is in my study of, again, national surveys, I find that upwards of 85% of Latter-day Saints still claim Mormons as their preference, despite whether or not they're going to church. So I just like to say that in terms of drug use and the data that Tim is having giving to us, that what we're seeing is a picture of people who say they are Mormon, and you put that in the context of people moving in and out of religious activity at some time in their life, you begin to see how the issues in Mormonism and in terms of religious identity are very personal and developmental issues And that at any one time in a person's life, they may not be consistent with what you would expect Mormonism to be, and may be working out some very different issues. And we're certainly getting a picture of those kinds of things as we look at drug use and premarital sex and divorce rates and those kinds of things. Now, having said that, let me just say, let's open this up, and I guess we can go right to your question and have Tim answer it.
How come?
Let's answer his question first, and then we'll go to yours. He asked it before.
Okay, let me address the question of the relationship between frequency of church attendance and other behaviors, whether it be smoking marijuana or premarital sex. In many cases, the correlation is higher for Mormons than for most other groups. That was clear in Steve's data. It's clear in my data. I hesitate to jump to the next statement that this means church activity is a strong influence. Another is that people who engage in deviant behavior defined by the church feel less comfortable in the church. So when I find a correlation between church attendance and marital instability, is that because people who are active don't get divorced, or is it because people who get divorced don't feel comfortable in church, so they quit going? So the correlation explanation is not clear to me. And I suspect some of both things are going on. That the church does encourage conformity, but at the same time, people who don't conform feel less comfortable, so they quit attending.
Now, let's go to your question.
Except for the word of wisdom and drugs, the LDS are not so different from others. Why aren't we more different from others than others?
Okay, your statement was, except for the word of wisdom, we're different in word of wisdom, but not in other things. But I felt in my presentation, I showed we were quite different in some other ways.
In number of children.
In number of children, percent married, premarital sex, age at marriage. I think we were different in several ways. One point I didn't make, if you... Yeah, I think it was a lot different. You don't think it was much, but it's a lot different. In fact, if we took these 17 groups, and I did some more fancy statistical analysis and characterized the groups, and I found they all fit in a sort of triangle, and three groups define the extremes of that triangle of religious groups. The three groups are blacks with no religious preference, Jews, and Mormons. So those tend to be the three extremes. And you know, we have a sense in many ways Jewish culture is different from white Protestant culture. Well, Mormonism is as different from white Protestant culture as Judaism is, or as blacks with no religious preference are. I consider that to be quite a bit of difference.
Yeah, we don't care about women.
The question was in the family surveys, why did we just pick women? Two of the national surveys only ask women because they give more accurate answers about birth dates of children and marriage dates and dates at which the marriage ended than men do. And so women really give us a better demographic trend than women.
I'd like to make a short statement and then a question.
You want to put it on the microphone here?
Yeah, if you're going to make a statement, we better have you stand in the mic so it gets on the tape.
I'm going to have to be smooth about this, aren't I? Get on the mic.
Well, I found, referring to Professor Heaton's report specifically, I found many of the, in fact, most of the reported findings are very similar to my own research reported in the scientific literature. back starting in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s. For example, comparing samples in Mormon culture with a Midwestern culture, United States, and then again with a Danish culture, a part of permissive Scandinavia, using the questionnaire method with university students, first of all, and then later using a method I helped develop called record linkage, where we linked the marriage records with the birth records to calculate the interval between marriage and birth of the first child. And studying that interval, we're able to measure premarital pregnancy as well as other things. And then again linked that with the divorce records to see how premarital pregnancy was related to divorce, and compared this across cultures and Mormons and non-Mormons. Now I found, as Tim has reported, I found the Mormons have larger families, both desired and actual. I found much less premarital sex, both approved and in actual practice, much lower rates of premarital pregnancy. I found a number of other things along this same line, which is fine. But my samples, of course, were small. They had the advantage of combining the record linkage approach with the questionnaire approach, which helped one confirm the other, and so forth. Now, I'm very pleased with this reported data, however. I think this is an excellent follow-up that should be made and is being made, and, of course, using a national sample and a national probability sample has much to be said in its favor, much advantage over some of the earlier pioneer approaches. The question I would like to ask, Professor Heaton especially, I think for the enlightenment of all of us, could you tell us a little bit more about how these national samples were drawn and who sponsored them, for example, under whose sponsorship? And were the data gathered by interview or questionnaire? Just to give us a little better picture of the kind of data here we're dealing with here. That would be helpful. But thank you for your report and your work.
Steve might want to say more about his methodology, too. In these three surveys, they were sponsored and paid for by national governmental organizations. They were all collected by face-to-face interview with the respondents. What they do to take the sample is they'll break up the whole country into clusters and sample those, and then sample neighborhoods and go into neighborhoods and interview so many households. It's really quite a complicated process, but all three of the surveys were had a simple, a similar sampling procedure, and they were all interview.
Under the umbrella of the Census
Bureau? Not necessarily the Census Bureau. There are other agencies that do this, and often they will have a private university organization do the interviews. Temple University did the survey of families and households. I don't know the name of the national agency. Sorry.
Now, on mine, I think I did mention that mine is funded by the National Institute on Drug Abuse. They fund the University of Michigan, the Institute of Social Research, specifically to do this survey each year. Using area probability methods, they randomly select high schools across the country. There are, I think, about 125 of them that are randomly picked to represent all areas of the country. They send trained people to those high schools, and they administered the questionnaire in the classroom under control conditions of those who attended that particular day. And they were all done in the spring of the year.
You can answer that better than anybody.
Yes, the church is very interested in collecting data like this and papers that are doing that. There is at headquarters a department, I think it's now called the Research Information Department, And there are people there doing full-time, who do research like this, full-time for the church, trying to understand what problems Latter-day Saints are experiencing, not only in the United States, but in countries around the world. Tim Heaton has done participated in demographic research. I've done research on activity and inactivity, currently involved in a study of adolescent faith development funded by the church. So there's an extensive research program funded by the church.
I'll make one more comment. One thing that concerns me as I've just looked at these analyses is that there's probably some bias in the studies that are sponsored by the church, because some people who've moved around a lot and are less active are harder to find, and they're less likely to respond. And I'm not sure that the church is aware of how extensive that bias is. And one good thing that may come from this is to point out any official church data may underestimate some behaviors. Both the drug data and the family data were collected in the 80s. Yeah? 5 or 6 years old.
What's happened since that time?
How do we know
for drugs, because that survey is taken annually and they have some press releases. I think the 91 is now yet, but the 90 data is out. And I can just respond generally on drug use, that the drug use is similar. In some areas it's actually declined in overall use rates slightly in the United States since then. And I did a survey in Utah, and it's similar in Utah, and that the drug use, I did a survey in 84 and another in 89, and there were some modest decreases, particularly in marijuana use, and that's true nationally. In alcohol, that use really has not decreased much, though. We had two questions, was all. One was a question about how important is religion to you. So it's just a question of personal belief or importance. And the other one was attendance. So we can... That's true. And I think that is somewhat crude as a measure, and certainly in future studies we need more refined measures of religiosity. You know, these were high school seniors, and I know that there's, even though it's still very socially acceptable, I know from having teenage children at the senior year, it's much different than if you're a ninth grader. And so it's, I think, a little more easy for them, if they don't want to, not to go at that age. And if you look at activity rates, I think it's at that age when some of them stop going.
I don't think that means the data aren't important. A lot of the influence of religion is social influence. It's what your friends are doing and what your parents tell you you ought to do and what other people you respect tell you you ought to do, maybe as much as your notions about what perfection or heaven or good behavior are like. So the social aspect is very important in religion.
Well, I didn't really directly test those theories. I just introduced those to say that those have been explanations of drug use, and saying that in the religious context, especially, it can operate as a social control mechanism, but that also, like if you look at the Mormon culture, and the fact that like kids go to the young men's and young women's activities, there's a peer group there which may have similar values where they can learn values which are against drug use, so in that sense it can operate. But I did not, you know, test that learning mechanism directly. Well, I think there are several kinds of explanations. Certainly I think that it lends support to the social control mechanism, and I think especially when you look at, if you look at other studies of drug use, if you're in homes where their parents don't use drugs and they have, even though friends at school may be using drugs, they have some peers at church who maybe don't use it or are less likely to use it, and they're taught at home and religiously not to use certain substances, that has a learning mechanism as well as especially a social control mechanism. So I guess that's the way that I would interpret it. No. In fact, I was seeing as those that were kind of integrated together in that. Now, I would like to make one other comment about when you look at the premarital pregnancy thing, it's important that you remember the pregnancy, abortion, and birth. And sometimes we confuse those three, that if you look at premarital births, of course, that's the outcome of pregnancies and abortion. And you could have more premarital births and fewer premarital pregnancies if your abortion rate is low. And so those things in refined studies need to be, that needs to be kept in mind.
Faith.
The faith method?
Yeah. Must work more for Mormons.
It's complicated, and partly complicated because, for example, abortion data, you cannot get good results interviewing people. They will often not tell you if they've had an abortion. And they may also often shift one of the dates of the events, like the birth, to make it seem more consistent with the marriage date. So we can't resolve it completely with data. If you were to ask me what I guess is going on, a pattern of less frequent sexual intercourse, or less likely to have sexual intercourse before marriage, means less likely to get pregnant. Okay? But also less likely to have abortion, so more likely to have a premarital birth if they do get pregnant, but they have a younger age at marriage and may, in fact, be more inclined to legitimate a pregnancy with marriage than other people. So there are several ways you can adjust your behavior, either by using birth control or by seeking abortions or by getting married younger. And exactly how all that works out for Mormons, I can't say for sure.
Well, I think it's had some effect in that the tobacco use, I mentioned the different drugs that have declined, and use of tobacco over the past, 10, 15 years has decreased. Now, there was a period there where smokeless tobacco did increase, and I think in recent years that has decreased somewhat.
Then add to that the marital success is measured by stability. Being a Mormon seems to have little impact there, some impact on premarital sex and more impact on smoking cigarettes. So that you're really raising an important question. What kinds of things does the church do that influences people's behavior, and are those the things we think are most important? Are those the behaviors we most want to have influenced? I don't have an answer, but it's a very important question.
Well, one of the other things is that in our society today, sexual behavior is more acceptable in many ways than the use of tobacco. And if you're into sports, you don't smoke or drink, but you still have sex. So part of it is the environment in which the church finds itself. And to the extent that certain behaviors are far more acceptable in the broader environment, that's going to have an impact, too, on how successful the church is in getting people not to do those things.
I don't have any good data on that. I know that in the survey I did in 89 and in 84, and this is state data, and you have to remember that about in the state, about two-thirds of Utah are LDS, and in Utah County, about 90% is LDS. And I know that the rate of prescription drug abuse, depressant drugs, barbiturate, those kind of things, was higher in Utah County than it was in some of the others, which suggests that's there may be some link there. And I really don't have any more concrete data than that, than just those kind of general data. Yeah, I think there is a problem. Of course, you have to realize the Catholic Church is a very large and diverse group. Some analyses like that could be done, but I haven't seen it broken down like that. I know that the Catholic Church does have a national organization to work on drug abuse within their church, and perhaps they would have some data like that. And I have their number if anybody wanted, but I don't know any specific data on that.
Well, I think our time has run out. Thank you for coming, and thank you, panelists.